This is Patty Vasquez. Is it the end of the world? Could be. You don't know. Anything could happen. I'm sure that the people down in New Orleans didn't think it was going to turn out like that for them. You know, when there's a tornado, when there's an earthquake, if there's any kind of natural disaster, if there's some sort of attack, maybe you want to be ready. For Y2K, I'll be honest with you, I had a pantry of bottled water and batteries, and I'm still trying to finish all my canned corn. So that happened.
You know, people make fun of Y2K quite a bit, but mm-hmm. If we hadn't prepared for that, and I mean like technologically,
right,
something bad would have happened. Actually stopped it.
It's because I prepared.
So that's a success story. Yeah,
because we got so scared, the people who were working on it amped up their. I don't think that's true.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, no, you're wrong. You know what? There's someone who could talk to us more coherently about this than you or I. And we have on the line from the Kuma Survival School, we have Waysun Johnny Tai. Hey, Johnny, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, very good. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for staying up late with us. Unless you stay up late wondering about the end of the world. Maybe that's why you're up late.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, you had a long weekend. You were at the NRA convention this weekend in Indianapolis, weren't you?
I was. I just got in. It was a fantastic show with something about, I believe there's close to 80,000 attendees to that show. It was very, very busy.
I know it was because I was in Indianapolis at the same time, and you guys got all the rooms downtown. I had to stay by the airport.
Yeah, it was packed. There's a lot of people.
It was super packed. And so tell us a little bit. What is Kuma Survival School?
The Kuma Survival School is Chicagoland's mobile school, meaning we don't have a storefront or a location where a lot of mobile instructors around Chicago and actually around the country and some internationally of instructors that teach urban and wilderness survival. We teach disaster preparedness. We teach home preparation, vehicle preparation, how to survive the world's worst situations.
Right. And the thing is, like I mentioned about natural disasters, it's not unimaginable. I mean, obviously, we can all imagine it, but it happens all the time.
All the time. Since 2010, there's probably been about 260 man-made and natural disasters. It happens probably 80 times a year.
Wow. And what can people learn from your courses?
Well, what we teach, everything from urban survival, we'll teach home preparation, vehicle preparation, how to, short-term, long-term food storage, evacuation routes. We teach how to prepare your home in your family and your loved ones, how to deal with and survive a worst-case scenario. So a worst-case scenario can be anything from waking up in the middle of the night and finding out that you live on the 30th floor of a high-rise and there's a fire, to car crashes, to I remember a couple of years ago when Lakeshore Drive was shut down because people were abandoning them in their cars. People were not knowing what to do.
Well, actually, can I ask you about that in particular since you brought it up? What would you recommend people should have done in their car? Would it have been better to stay in their car, or should people, once they realize they're not going? Because that's the problem with Chicago drivers, right? They were sitting there for a half an hour, and they were still thinking, any minute now, this is going to open right up. I'm guessing maybe 3 hours later, they're like, oh, this isn't going well.
Well, until there is some kind of announcement on the radio, or there is an honest to goodness or honest to God natural disaster, you should stay in your vehicle.
Stay
on the phone until you have to go. That's the same thing with bugging out. You bug in, you stay at home until you choose it's time to leave, or you don't have a choice, but you have to go. And, you want to be prepared, some people should be paying attention to the weather.
Well, that's what killed me, was that Skilling said that storm was going to hit Lakeshore Drive at 2:33 p.m. Of course, he's not going to know that an accordion bus is going to flip over by Belmont. But at the same time, he said the winds were going to be 80 miles an hour coming off the lake.
Right.
Yeah. And what could people have had in their cars? Blankets, maybe some food, some water. I would have needed something to help, evacuate my system. Here's what I was telling my producer before the show. When I have to go on car rides when I'm driving in snowstorms, I have kind of, I'm sure it's a rudimentary go bag. It just has blankets and extra socks and water. But I also have a big peanut butter jar so that I can evacuate
Exactly. You know, I mean, you should, you know, your go bag is going to have, you know, something that you could, that you, that if you have to leave your vehicle or you leave your home, something that will last you 72 hours, you know, 3 days worth of food, water, supplies, things to keep from getting bored, a book.
I didn't think of that because I just imagine just being scared and worried. You have something to distract yourself. Okay, have a book.
Exactly. You keep yourself, you know, so you can keep your emotions high, you know, whether it's, you know, if it's a child in the Game Boy, well, that's, they don't have Game Boys anymore, they have PSIs and things like that, you know, but things to keep your kids busy or keep yourself busy to keep your spirits up, because generally, you know, unless it's a real natural disaster, man-made disaster, you know, traffic is going to clear up, you know, and so it's one thing if you're driving to Kentucky and you flip your car over in a road, or, you know, or there's a hurricane or, you know, but if it's snow, wait it out.
Yeah, you have to.
Wait it out, because otherwise, the lakeshore, eventually it's going to clear up. You know, you're going to be stuck in your car. That's one of the reasons why you should always have a full tank. You know, keep your tank more than half full. I keep 10 gallons of fuel in my trunk. You know, I keep 2 5-gallon containers every time I'm in my car, because you just never know when the next gas station is going to be.
Yeah, and you don't want to be hoofing it in the snow and the wind.
That's right.
I do. I am one of the people that thinks about these things, and I try to plan, but I don't have an actual plan.
Well, that's the problem. That's the problem that most people have, is they think it's a great idea, but they don't sit down and make the plan and prepare. And to quote my friend Adam from Equipped to Endure, if you're not always prepared, you're never prepared. And so it's a good idea to sit down and actually make a plan for situations, especially if you have a family, you know, and to let them know, if there ever is a situation, this is what we're going to do. This is where we're going to meet. This is how we're going to connect. This is where we're going to meet. And if our plan A should fail, what's our plan B, our plan C, and our plan D? And, you know, some people think it's a lot of planning, it's a lot of work, and it's paranoia. But if you love your family and your kids, you know, then it's well worth it. You know, it's worth the time.
And once you have the plan, you have the plan. That's the thing. It's not really like it's transitory. You have the things that you need. One of the things I've always wondered about is cash. How much cash? I mean, I know this is a weird question, but should you have cash set aside in the event of, you know, because I don't even know what event. But
You should have as much cash as you can afford to have put aside, you know, and it's, you just consider it emergency cash.
Right.
You know, I mean, everyone should have, whether you have, you know, survival cash. It doesn't matter if it's for that rainy day when you lose your job or that you just need to, you know, or the banks are closed
right.
for the holiday. You should just have some cash aside. And, you know, if you can afford to have $5,000 put aside, then do it. All you can have is $500 aside, that's great. Something is better than nothing, you know. And some supplies and some training is better than having nothing. If the worst thing to be is that person that says, "Yeah, I'll be okay,"
right?
You know, and do nothing. That's the worst thing. The worst person you can be.
And even the simple things. I had a newborn when Katrina hit New Orleans, so I was kind of watching a lot of television as I was taking care of my newborn. Oddly breastfeeding a lot, watching these families really struggling. And I was thinking, like, you know, how many, you should have diapers, you should have medicine, you should make sure that you've got a bag that has all that you can literally go.
That's right. And what you just said, things like diapers, that's something that you should have in your car. You know, one of my classes I'm coming up with the next couple weeks is a vehicle preparation, where I have everything I need should I get stuck in my car. You know, especially with Chicago's worst, you know, horrible winter we just had. You know,
yeah.
You don't be stuck in your car with a newborn without diapers or things that you'll need. And it's common sense. It really is. You know, survival training is nothing about common sense. People do survival training every single day of their lives. They survive getting up, going to work. These single moms survive having to deal with these challenges. It's just all about having really good planning and preparation. You know, and it does happen. These scenarios happen all the time where people get stuck. They don't know what to do because they failed. They had a piss poor planning, you know.
Right.
It's something that people really need to think about. And so our classes put people in the scenarios and situations that force you to think, force you to plan. And so, you know, and most of my students come around and they go, I just, you know, never thought about it. I just don't know what to do if something should happen. And then I watch the news and I see these poor people struggling. You know, I remember in Hurricane Sandy, I saw people going, I can't get a bottle of water. I mean, to me, in the middle of a hurricane, water is the last thing you need to worry about. You know, I can't, you know, that you have water everywhere.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, if you learn how to filter out water, you'd be all right.
And you have different types of go bags. So I love this that you have a get home bag for people who commute. So
right.
if you don't have your vehicle, that's just, I mean, really, you do break this down really well. I mean, and again, there are people who know me that laugh that I do have a go bag, but I'm not as organized as this. But now my friends listening are like, uh-oh, Patty's going to have an inch bag. I love
that's right.
What's an inch bag?
An inch bag is an I'm not coming home bag. You know, it's for when, you know, a go bag is for when the first 72 hours, which are generally the worst, you know, but after that 72 hours, uh-oh, you know, I may not be coming home. And so an inch bag is long-term, you know, long-term survival things that, you know, can help you last as long as possible. You know, more tools, more supplies, more extra things like, you know, more basics, more socks, more underwear, more toothpaste, or things that you're going to need in the long term. More MREs, which you know, or Mountain House food packs,
right?
Than you normally would have.
And I love your suggestion to know routes out of the city that don't require the highways.
That's right. Well, you know, basically, if something should happen in the city, everyone's going to be on the highways and the main roads. So you want to know three or four ways to get to your mom's house or your parents' house or your family's house in the western suburbs. You know, people see on the news, oh, now we're going to bug out to the woods. You know, that's television, you know. I mean, unless you live in Kentucky or North Carolina where there's a lot of woods that you can sustain yourselves off of, that's not going to happen. In urban survival, we're in a concrete jungle. So, I mean, head west to the less populated areas, away from the water, away from the most urban areas, and you keep heading west. It does get more rural the further west you go, but I mean, it'll eventually be less populated, and you know, and that's the direction to move. And so, you want to know where your family members are, how to gather up, and how to get there. You know, and you know, you think the expressway is bad on every day.
Yeah, I can imagine. Traffic. Right, imagine a disaster.
Know.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. You know, imagine a disaster. You know, so I mean, you don't want to be stuck in that mess. You know, and there is a chance that, you know, if there is a disaster, you have to abandon your vehicle. What happens if you're on vacation in L.A.? You know, and
you know what? When I go to L.A., I always sleep with my. This is so weird. I sleep with my clothes on. I think this is something people don't think about when they go to hotels. Is you not only do you need to know where your emergency exits are, but know where your shoes are. Like I always put my shoes next to the side of the bed in case there is a fire alarm. I want to be able to get out of the building if it's cold or whatever. I want to have my senses about me.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job. You're doing a fantastic because that's a lot more than a lot of other people think about. And that's the truth, you know, because things happen when you're on vacation, when you're traveling, when you're away from the comforts of your home. And you should know where your emergency exits are. You should know how to get out of that place because, God forbid, something happened and you wake up in the middle of the night, you don't have your bearings. I keep my keys inside of my shoes by the door.
Ooh, I like that. And your wallet, too, then, I'm guessing, with the
money. In my wallet, too. You know, oh. And I also keep a dummy wallet. I keep my real wallet and I keep a dummy wallet. A dummy wallet has generally, you know, an expired ID and a minimum amount of cash in it, you know, and then I keep my real wallet too. So, so if you're traveling and someone steals your wallet or takes your wallet, you have what you really need put aside.
Yeah, I do that too. I have my so weird. I mean, I do some of the basics. I always have I have one of those plastic passport cards, and I have it separate from my purse so that I have two different bags. Yeah.
So you were prepping and you didn't even know it.
No, I kind of knew it. I don't know why I do it. Here's the thing. Do I call you Waysun? Your first name?
They call me John. Waysun without Johnny Tai is my full name. Uh-huh. Call me Johnny, and you can call me Johnny.
Well, Johnny, I think part of it came from being a kind of a way too hard. I was a hardcore lifeguard, which is sort of a teenage thing, but I always like was thinking of worst case scenarios. Are you like that? Like wherever you go, are you constantly thinking, okay, if something happens in this building or on this train, this is what I'm doing. I'm diving under those chairs. I'm going toward, you know, is that how you are everywhere you go?
I am. And some people think it's paranoia. And you know what? A little bit of paranoia, all this is safety and being prepared. That's what keeps you alive. It's the people who are happy-go-lucky, and they don't pay attention, and their faces are, you know, on their iPhones all day, and they have no idea what's going on. Those are the people that become victims, and they don't know what to do, you know. And people, and the problem is with people today, and when I say people, I mean the general population, is no one wants to admit that, you know, it's very hard to admit that you don't know what to do or you're ill-prepared for a bad situation.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. I think that I really don't want to be a victim. And you have a lot of, 34 years of martial arts training?
That's right.
So what got you involved in martial arts?
It was a family thing. You know, our family had a chain of schools throughout Chicago. We were pretty well-known. So it wasn't something that I chose to do, or my parents said, hey, we're going to get you involved in martial arts when you were a kid. We're a martial arts family, so I was raised in it.
And were they survivalists as well, or did that grow out of your experiences and sort of your awareness of your environment and things that were going on in the world?
Well, you know what? People don't realize, but martial arts is a part of survival, you know, and survival is a fight. You know, if you think about it, you're fighting to survive something. So the martial arts mentality, and it goes hand in hand because, for example, you know, if you were to be attacked by 2-3 people, that's a survival situation.
It sure is.
Or even just one person. You know, you're walking, taking your garbage out, and you're attacked by someone, and they start dragging you down. You're in a real life survival situation, and that is your end of the world if you don't do something.
Yeah.
So if you're ill prepared, you know, that could be the end of life as you know it. So, I mean, martial arts, it's a mindset. You know, my mindset is survival is our mindset. Obviously, failure is not an option. But, you know, because the opposite of survive is what. You have to be prepared for anything at all times. And in Chicago, people, you know, Chicago isn't like New York, you know, where people people in Chicago are getting a little bit more, are getting more and more aware of violence.
Right.
Because
it's spreading out. It's not as centralized as it used to be. We have to get going, but I want to find out where people can take your classes and get more information about what you do.
Well, if you go to www.cuma, that's C-U-M-A, survivalschool.com, I have a bio. I have links to IllinoisReady.gov, links to FEMA. There's a full facts and questions page on there. That's exactly what we do. There's a link on there from Zozy.com where you can link on to 2 upcoming classes in May and June. So it's a full schedule. What we do, there's videos, there's reviews, and you know, everything you need is right on our website.
And it's on my Facebook page as well. I've got links there to the kumasurvivalschool.com. And I'm looking forward to meeting you because I'm going to come check those classes out. And I think you can tell. You can tell that I'm going to come check that out.
Oh, I'd love to. You come as my guest. Give me a call. Don't register. Come as my guest.
Oh, don't tell people that on the air. It'll sound like I'm cheating.
Oh, you're not cheating. You know, I enjoy this. I'm very passionate about helping people with this. You know, I mean, it's about spreading the idea, you know, because we're not, you and I, you have a similar mindset. You're not crazy. You just want to make sure that you're going to be okay.
Exactly.
That's all survival is knowing that you're going to be okay. God forbid something bad should happen. And bad things happen, and people got to wake up and realize that. You know, they do. It doesn't just happen to someone, you know, if it happens to someone else, you know, you are my someone else, and I'm your someone else. So, I mean,
right.
The stuff happens, and you just got to be prepared. Otherwise, you're going to get stuck.
Yeah, and don't get stuck. Thank you so much, Johnny. I will see you soon. Have a great evening, and we'll send people to kumasurvivalschool.com. Have a great night.
You too. Thank you.
This is Patty Vasquez, and, you know, there's a lot going on in the world, and I know that we're distracted by other things, but the United States has imposed new sanctions on allies of Russian President Vladimir Putin, and we want to know what that means. So we have with us Professor Stephen Zunes. He's a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco, and he's on the line with us tonight. And hi, Professor. How are you doing tonight?
Very good. Thank you.
You know what? Let's pretend like there are people living under a rock and they're watching TV, but they're watching, you know, coverage of a missing airline or some really racist basketball team owner. What would be a thumbnail synopsis of what is going on right now?
Well, right now you have in a number of areas in eastern Ukraine, these armed militiamen who are Russian-speaking Ukrainians, but there's a fair amount of evidence to suggest they're getting some direct support from the Russian government. which have seized government buildings, set up roadblocks in a number of eastern Ukrainian cities, and declare themselves, in effect, sovereign of the central government in Kiev. And the government in Ukraine is in a dilemma. On the one hand, obviously, this is illegal, and they have the right and obligation to restore order. At the same time, if they do crack down with force and a lot of people get killed, you have thousands of Russian troops on the border starting to intervene if Russian lives are threatened. And meanwhile, the Ukrainian government itself is of questionable legitimacy because they seize power in a questionable legal fashion. They haven't had elections yet, but it's a real mess. And given the strong evidence suggests that the Russian government itself is behind these people in the uprising, there is growing international pressure on Moscow to stop this illegal interference in Ukrainians' internal affairs.
And these sanctions that were imposed today, will they have any effect, do you believe?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a smart way of doing it, I think. I mean, I think in some cases, we've had situations where the U.S. just imposes total absolute sanctions, boom, and loses all leverage. But by gradually cranking them up and offering relief, if Russia acts more responsibly, it has both an incentive to do things better, as well as a disincentive to make things worse. Russia's not like it was during the Soviet days, where it had its own economic system separate from the world. It and its Eastern European partners, they called it the Comintern, and it was like a whole different very very little trade outside of it. But now Russia's integrated into the international economy, and they're already taking a hit. The stock market has fallen. Trade is down. There are a lot of business people who are starting to grumble, saying, is this assertion of nationalism worth what it's doing to the economy? So, I'm thinking that it's having and will increasingly have an impact and could make a difference. And it's really, really the only tool we have, to be honest. I mean, there's really no military option that wouldn't be too horrible to contemplate. So there's not a lot more that can be attempted at this point.
And President Obama is being accused of not doing enough. Do you believe these are forceful enough, these sanctions?
Yeah, we don't have much choice. I mean, he can't do much about illegal Russian intervention in Eastern Europe than the Russians could do about some of our illegal intervention in Latin America during an earlier time, and similarly the Moscow they invaded Czechoslovakia when Johnson was president, they invaded Hungary when Eisenhower was president, they successfully pushed for the martial law crackdown in Poland when Reagan was president, they attacked Georgia when Bush was president. I mean, the Russians will do what they want with neighboring countries, regardless of how tough the American president comes across. I think there's a tendency, I think, on both the left and the right to think the United States can do more than it can, either for good or for ill. But there are real limits to power, and Germany, our best hope is to work with the international community and trying to get some kind of unified response to Russian aggression.
And are the real limits to power the threat of nuclear attack, or what are the real threats to power?
The limits to power.
I mean, the real limits.
The limits to power, and it's a complex world, and the United States cannot simply snap its fingers or do something that can change behavior. And to be honest, we are somewhat handicapped. I mean, when allies of the United States, like Morocco and Israel, have illegally annexed neighboring countries, we've actually increased aid and supported them. And so, it's just hard to take a really principled stand against Russia, because they can point out double standards. When John Kerry says it's illegal to invade countries on false pretenses, when he was a big supporter of the Iraq war and the ground had weapons of mass destruction, it kind of plays into the whole Russian propaganda thing, saying, see, the U.S. isn't doing this in principle. They're a bunch of hypocrites. So I think part of, because America's strength is not just in terms of how many tanks and missiles and planes we have. Our strength, I think, also has to do with not just military leadership but moral leadership. And unfortunately, in recent years, we've kind of been lacking the latter.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, if these sanctions, you're saying that this is really the only thing we can do, but if they're not effective, is there another step to take?
Yeah, well, I think in the long term, what we need to see is have Ukraine have fair elections, get support for their economy, so it seems like a good, democratic, prosperous country that people will want to be part of. I mean, if I was living in that part of the world, I'd much rather be part of a prosperous, democratic, European-looking country than part of Putin's Russia. And so I think the one thing the United States and Europe can do is to both try to pressure the Ukrainian government to clean up its act, clean up the corruption, be democratic and accountable. And instead of enforcing kind of Greece-style austerity programs, which makes everybody miserable, actually do the kind of investment that will make it an attractive place to be part of. And so I also just to make sure that the Russian minority does get granted their rights, so there won't be an excuse for Russian aggrandizement, and stop talking about expanding NATO and allow them have them be part of Europe politically, but don't insist on being on a military alliance, which I think will just provoke the Russians even more.
Yeah, we don't want. I really don't understand the desire to spread Russia to spread the power like this. And then like you said, they keep going back and forth. Every time we think that we've kind of put a stop to it, it seems to just flare up again and all over them, and even worse every time. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the senior president Bush or his secretary of state, James Baker, promised Gorbachev and the Soviets that if you allow Eastern Europe to be free and Germany to be unified, we won't move NATO eastward. But we violated that promise, and the former Warsaw Pact countries are coming NATO, and former Baltic republics of the Soviet Union now part of NATO, and a lot of us who were wondering why there still is a NATO, frankly, because it was originally formed to counter the Soviet, which no longer exists. So I really, just a part of it, I think, is that we've unintentionally re-stimulated some of the old Russian paranoia, because it's, after all, Ukraine is by which Napoleon and the Kaiser and Hitler marched across to attack Russia. There's close cultural ties that had been part of Russia for 350 years. So the idea of NATO getting just a couple hundred miles from Moscow, Steve, so I think the kind of old paranoia which plays right into the hands of demagogues like Putin.
Right. Right, so these sanctions might be the best way to go, like you said, right, that we have right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, right. Not a whole lot we can do, but sanctions at this point seems to be the least bad option.
So what this has done is they're freezing U.S. assets and some of the companies that are involved with Putin personally. Is that right?
Yes, I mean, the system has gone from a communist system to a kind of crony capitalist system, Putin and these oligarchs and these people with close ties to the ruling clique have their hands in a lot of business enterprises, and that's not great for the Russian people, obviously, but it does in certain ways make it easier for these kind of sanctions to have an impact, because you're not hurting ordinary people as much as you are the people who really have the power and the decision-making capability, who are the people you do want to target.
Right, like Putin himself, go after him personally.
Exactly.
And all of his cronies. I gotcha.
Exactly.
I think I'm tracking. I think I'm catching up with this. I think I'm figuring it out, because with help from you. I hope that you'll talk to us again when we need to be updated and you keep us informed on this, because you make us smarter every time we talk to you.
Thanks. I enjoy it.
Thank you so much. That's Professor Stephen Zunes. And where can people find you on your website?
Yeah, it's just stephenzunes.org, STEPHENZUNES.
And you go there and read more about the work that you do. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening, Doctor.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. See, we get smarter on WGN, and we have fun. That's
dream.
That means it's time to slow down a little bit. Even though we've been talking about the end of the world and possibly a nuclear war with Russia,
it's been kind of a depressing hour.
Yeah, so, we're going to lighten things up a little bit before we send you off to the bedtime news story.
I have to say, E.T. is one of my favorite movies. I did not know that there was a corresponding Atari video game at the time. That
worst game ever.
Ever? Do you know how bad it
was? It was horrible. You just walk and fall into pits. That's all you would do.
That's literally all that happened in the Atari game.
That's it. There was some guy chasing you, and you'd try to run, and you'd fall in a pit, and then you'd hover out.
Well, and the problem is that E.T. had such short legs. I'm sure it was very easy for him to fall into pits.
All he had to do was, like, stick his head up, and he would float up to the top of the hole. That's how it worked.
Float to the top of the hole.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'm not familiar with this. And Atari was the video game console that had, like a fake wood panel on it. Did it have that?
Yeah, the front kind of had a little fake strip of wood, but it was mostly black.
It was mostly black. Mm-hmm. But at the time, like, the fake wood paneling was very popular on, like, you know, on
things that couldn't possibly have wood paneling.
Like station wagons, for some reason, had wood paneling on them. Well, this video game was so bad. They rushed it to market, and it was a huge flop, compounded by the fact it was their first big slump, apparently. But they literally buried them, Ted. They buried them, dumping truckloads of unsold games in a desert landfill in New Mexico.
That's about right.
They dug a hole and just filled it with it.
Do you think that the E.T. game would have been more successful had the E.T. or had the Atari programmers had access to the code babes?
Oh, I see. Right? Perhaps they would have been more inspired to write a better game. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, with a couple of hundred onlookers, excavators. This is 30 years ago that they filled this landfill, and now they're excavating it. It's not like they're finding Sue in the middle of one of the Dakotas. It's E.T. video games from Atari.
I'm just amazed by the level of disdain that, no, we can't let this end up on, like, flea market shelves.
Right.
We're going to bury it so it will never see the light of day again.
Right. And I wonder if there – check and see if there's any on eBay. There's about to be a lot of them on eBay. This is the strangest thing. There were 700,000 plus units were discarded. 700,000? That's how many were in the pit? That's just crazy. Yeah, so it's been sitting there for 30 years. I wonder if they're still usable. I don't know. So apparently this game was barely better than Pong, or was Pong actually a better game?
Pong might have been better. I see it's going for as much as $20.50 on eBay. There's a factory sealed one for $130.
A factory sealed one?
Sealed and unopened.
Yeah, a bunch of those can be found in New Mexico in this big pit that they unearthed. Yeah, there may be as many as 750,000 of them in the landfill, with other titles mixed into the E.T. game. So I wonder what else was so bad that it belonged in this pit of doom in the middle of the desert. Yeah, it was by the time the E.T. movie came out, Atari was actually already collapsing. Because they were struggling with their other games. The company didn't only folded 2 years later. I felt like Atari lasted a lot longer than 1984. That's it? Atari was gone by 1984? That just seems crazy to me.
That sounds about right.
I have no idea. Yeah. I wasn't a gamer. You know what I had? I had a VIC-20. I had a Commodore VIC-20 when I was a kid.
I had a VIC-20 when I was a kid, too.
I had the baseball game because it had a keyboard. That's why we liked it. It had the keyboard.
Yeah, the whole thing was built into the keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Ted? What was your first video game?
Oh, I had Atari.
You had Atari?
Yes.
And how long you don't still have it, do you?
No, it's gone long gone, but I had that till probably about 83, 84, and then there was nothing, and then around 87 or so, was it, that Nintendo came out?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember the first game I loved on Nintendo was the horse racing one. That was like I didn't own it.
I have no idea what game on Nintendo is horse racing.
There was horse racing. Nintendo had the little knob, didn't it? It had like that. It almost looked like a remote control and had like a knob when it was one of the controllers.
I don't think so. No, it was square. It was rectangular.
I think you're actually thinking of the Atari.
No, maybe there was another one. I don't think it was. Maybe it was an Atari. I didn't own it. It was somebody else's. There was horse racing, and because my dad was a big gambler, so I understood the horse racing games. Yeah, this is I play some Wii. As we discussed last night on the show, Ted, I do a Dance Dance Revolution, do some Proud Mary, do some of that stuff. I don't remember the E.T. video game. I do remember Pong. The baseball games are always kind of fun. I think Wii does a nice job with their baseball games. Well, I guess Keith Conrad found the Atari story to tickle his fancy, and he decided to use it tonight as part of our bedtime news story. And what we like to do is make sure that those of you who do need to go to sleep around this time, that we slow things down a little bit, and we give you a bedtime news story that both entertains and informs you. Those of you who have to stay awake, I hope that you enjoy it. And here we go with the bedtime news story.
Hi, kids. It's your Uncle Scott here with another bedtime news story. Tonight's tale is called Digging Up Trouble. Once upon a time in a far-off land, there was a brave group of computer programmers in a kingdom called Atari. One day, their king came to them and said that Steven Spielberg had a new movie called E.T. coming out, and if they wanted to keep their jobs, they should come up with a video game to go along with it. Can you say promotional tie-in, kids? The brave knights worked and worked through the night and finally came up with something that looked like the movie. Kinda, if you were really drunk. It turned out that the game looked terrible and was ever so difficult to play. It was a horrible embarrassment for the entire kingdom of Atari. So, the brave knights did the only thing they could. They loaded all of the games into their carriages, rode through the night, and buried them in the middle of the desert where no one could possibly find them ever. The brave knights were all fired, and the kingdom of Atari was devastated. Years went by, and no one dared to speak of it again until one day, a young prince arrived wanting to make something called a documentary. He found the games out in the middle of the desert, and the kingdom of Atari got to relive its embarrassment all over again. The moral of the story? If you're gonna bury your secrets in the middle of the desert, make sure there are no witnesses. I hope you enjoyed tonight's bedtime news story, kids. Good night.